This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Introducing the two-way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the two-way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the two-way for yourself at newbalance.com.
Welcome to the Power Cat Podcast, the original K-State sports show. Now let's go to the rolling Flint Hills, home of the Cats and Dogs studio. Here's your host, Tim Fitzgerald.
I tell you what, I want to do my Irish accent this entire podcast, but I realized I haven't done it in so long. I suck at it, so I'm not going to do that. Welcome to the Power Cat Podcast, recording this literally less than an hour after the announcement of Kansas State playing Iowa State in Ireland to start the 2025 season. And we probably don't have any questions on that.
I asked the question to start us off.
That's
the podcast.
Good. We're sponsored by Fridge Wholesale Liquor. You don't have to have fridge liquor to go to Ireland. You can just do your own thing. You can get liquor there. They have beer. They don't have Busch Light, I don't think.
Oh, that problem will be taken care of, I'm certain.
Dear Dublin, I am a lost child from County Cork. I would encourage you to buy lots of Busch Light. And I mean, start stacking it up right now. It doesn't have to be fresh beer. They're Iowa State fans. And go ahead and order it through the Fridge Wholesale Liquor. At the corner of this and that in the town in which we live, make sure you go check out the Fridge. Check out their social media. Fridge Fridays are always a treat on their social media. Hi, Ryan Gilbert. Your mic's working.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Ooh. Okay. Are you sure?
Yes.
Risky.
Yeah, we might turn you down.
Turn me down?
Yeah.
I have this thing turned all the way down. Goodness.
I don't even know which one you are. As soon as we got ready to go and hit record, Gilbert's mic stopped working.
But it wasn't my fault.
It wasn't your fault. I had so many apps open. My computer said, we don't have enough oomph to oomph. So they couldn't run that microphone quite right. But now we got the oomph. And I've got the oomph on dress wise. Look at that. It's my new mail rig panel shirt. I'm not going to get up.
Throw back to the bowling shirt days.
Bowling shirt. I love it. Purple's perfect. Lavender is kind of a gray lavender, which actually matches the gray lavender we use on some stuff. Mm-hmm. It's all about us. Let's get going with your questions from Wabash Station, even though the first question isn't from Wabash Station. It's from Zach Carlson.
I mean, technically, I'm on Wabash Station, so is it from Wabash Station?
Did you post it?
I posted it in my head and wrote it down in the Google Doc. First question, though, is from us or me. What are your Ireland thoughts?
Fans are upset, and I get why they're upset because they're losing a home game. But in the bigger picture, this is something K-State needed to do for two reasons. And I'm also going to say this. Folks, get used to this kind of thing. The new Big 12 is going to have to get creative and making sure they get on big stages, whether it's going overseas to play a week zero game or, you know, other things, playing on Friday night. The Big 12 is going to have to do things to increase their visibility because most of those key time slots on ABC, Fox, and ESPN and ESPN2, I fear a vast majority of them are going to the Big Ten and SEC. After all, they have a lot of money invested in that. And the Big 12 is secondary. So I can see this perpetuating itself into more things. I am told K-State will profit on top of their normal income from a home game at $1.5 million. And in this day and age of escalating costs of college athletics and the constant battle to keep up, do you have enough NIL? Are you paying your coaches enough? How many times have you folks wanted to pay coaches more so that you can retain them? Well, these are the kind of things you got to do to pay the bills. That extra million doesn't come out of thin air that you just awarded Jerome Tang's basketball program. You have to find income, and this will be common. K-State's going to have some budget shortfalls coming up if they don't address this, and this is one of the things they're doing. And, of course, I personally love it. I've always wanted to go to Ireland. According to the doctors, I'm running out of opportunities, so this is a great opportunity for me to make it to the land of my peoples, and I'll take Ryan Gilbert, and I'll leave him there.
This is it.
I'm gonna take you to Ireland and then sell you to a potato farmer.
Go ahead. You're still going? Okay. I mean, if you are a fan of Farmageddon, if you think that Iowa State is the most
excuse me, it's Farmageddon.
Farmageddon. Yes. Sorry, I did see that.
Power Cat Rider Ryan came with it.
Farmageddon.
Farmageddon.
If you think that is K-State's most important rivalry, if you're Iowa State and you think K-State's your most important rivalry, you know, this is disappointing to take a game out of the backyard. You know, they played two games in Arrowhead, but, you know, it's weird because they don't play in 2027. It has the long streak. They aren't going to play each other that year. You know, if you were going to play a game over in Ireland, pick that one. And make it a non-conference game. That's my personal opinion. But this is good for the Big 12. First Big 12 matchup over there. You know, it might be one of the best week zero games ever. Week zero is as exciting as getting a head start to the college football season is. A lot of the games are not fun or exciting. We have Florida State and Georgia Tech as this year's Aer Lingus college football classic game.
They typically get one team right.
Yeah.
I mean, Nebraska, which has a big brand, played Northwestern.
And they lost.
Maybe K-State should volunteer to send Scott Frost with Iowa State. We can help them out.
Florida State's great, but then you have Georgia Tech.
And Notre Dame played Navy this past year, right?
And that was a bad game.
It was a bad game. And then people have asked me, why don't they do this in 2027 when K-State and Iowa State aren't playing? Right. Well, Pittsburgh's playing Wisconsin. That game is already booked. I don't know how they got that far in advance, but I would like to find a way to keep Farmageddon going in 2027. K-State doesn't currently have a home game or, excuse me, non-conference major game for that season. I almost wonder if K-State wouldn't consider playing Iowa State and then just booking a one-and-done game on the road with them. If you can get a one-and-done to go to Notre Dame or something like that, do it. Go play them. Or maybe you can get them to play in Soldier Field or someplace. I don't know.
The new one?
Oh, yeah. It's getting so confusing.
Confusing. I think that if you're a fan and you want to go, I've looked at the Florida State and the Georgia Tech options. There's going to be charter flights probably out of Kansas City and Des Moines would be my best guess. Dublin is fortunate to have a U.S. pre-customs clearance facility. So you can clear customs before you get on the plane. And, you know, you can land in Des Moines or land in Kansas City or Wichita if they decide to go that far on whatever plane they use. I think that there's going to be decent options for flights. I think that if you want to go to the game, you can make a week of it or a weekend of it and have a good time. It's going to cost you, which is probably not, you know, pleasing to the K-State fan, but, you know, it's an opportunity. But, you know, the future of college football, you're probably going to be playing six home games a year. I mean, if there's consolidation towards the top, if it becomes a super league and everybody's playing everybody, unfortunately, you're going to have a balanced schedule like you do in the NFL. 8-8 up until a few years ago, and now it's 9-8 or 8-9. I mean, that's the reality. You're going to get six home games. If you get anything extra, that seventh one is going to be a bonus at this point instead of eight.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that athletic departments, not just K-State, I think, you know, other athletic departments across the country are going to have to think about scheduling. And, you know, at a certain point, you're going to have less than seven games quite frequently.
Yeah. I mean, it's the way it's got to be. I mean, if the, they're going to have Big 12 Mexico. If you want to go play in Monterey, right? That's where they're talking about the game. You're going to, someone's going to give up home game. So I know it sucks to lose a home game. It sucks for local business. It's, I'll be blunt here. I'm more concerned about that than the average fan that's pissed off they lose a home game. I feel bad for local business. But K-State Athletics, at the end of the day, is in charge of K-State Athletics and making their budget and doing things the right way, in a fiscally responsible way. And this is one of them. Besides, I don't want to have another snow game. I think there'll be like a potato famine that day. And then like people won't have potatoes.
Do you think that Irish people like talking about that? Like us making fun of it, I guess. Do you think they like that?
Probably not.
Yeah.
Probably not.
I don't know.
I mean, it worked out well for us as a country because a lot of people came over. I wonder if my family came over in the potato famine. I don't know.
I'm going to trace it back.
I'm third generation. Yeah.
I'm going to end on this, though. Credit to Gene Taylor for getting out in front, being proactive, making money. I think K-State's doing fine financially as an athletic department right now. But in the future, you've got to make sure you're set. So that extra $1.5 million that you're talking about, you know, that'll go a long way for the athletic department if they're able to, you know, increase the revenue like that.
I agree. Gills, I feel like I'm a guy that thinks you should be fiscally independent like K-State is. They don't give money or they don't get money from the university or students or the state. They actually give money back to the university, which I personally think should end. I mean, it's not like athletics isn't a great situation either. And I'm a big believer in paying your own bills and not having taxpayer money do things. That's what's behind everything going on with me and Kansas. I just want some clarification. If tax money is being used on athletics in the state, okay. It's a simple answer. And KU fans keep telling me, no, it's not. And it's got to be. And I'm so glad Travis Goff is going to talk to me about that tomorrow. Or today when you listen to this. But, you know, things are tight for K-State when they do it that way. When they do it the right way, it makes it difficult. You know, you can't just dial up some more money from the state. You're not Cal. Someone told me Rutgers gets $30 million a year from their university to run athletics. You're in the damn Big Ten. Why do you need that much money from your university? So I'm all in on this. And I know there's some downside to it, but of course I get to go. It clearly is making me more in favor of it because I get to go to Ireland.
Sure.
It's about me.
It's about Fitz. Next question is from Wabash 81. I've noticed the past couple of years, more freshmen football signees are enrolling in the spring semester. Is that up from previous years? And how much of an advantage is it for a college athlete to enroll early?
It's a huge advantage to be here for spring, have an adjustment period. Remember everything you went through as a freshman when you came into the university, your eyes were wide, you're moving into a dorm, everything's new. Throw in, oh, by the way, you got two-a-day practices. You know, this gives them an opportunity to kind of settle in. Spring football's less demanding. They come in doing the off-season weight program. Anytime you can get a freshman to stack 6 months more of weight training on top, it's going to help. And some players probably have been able to play because they came early. I think it sucks for the kids. It's almost like pressure now, Gills, to come early and enroll to increase your chances to play. But I can't imagine missing my last semester of high school. And plus, I was running that place. I was in charge, Gills. What were they done without me?
I don't know. But
they would have gone to Salina South.
Ooh, they would have just transferred. Nobody would have transferred Central.
Yeah, but I mean, you can ask Avery Johnson that question, like his, you know, him being prepared to play in this past season. Okay, if he doesn't come in the spring, that whole thing is probably going to be a different situation when he's, if he's just arriving in the fall and then having to play. So coming in the spring, obviously it you know, it is what it, you know, there's obviously like the last thing we just talked about with playing in Ireland, there's going to be pros and cons to anything out there.
Yeah. I mean, I would have hate to leave my poor prom date would have been there all by herself.
Oh no.
She, by the way, my senior year prom date became a nun. So that tells you how my prom date went.
That's kind of hilarious.
So Becky's a nun?
Now,
I mean, at this point.
Yeah, at this point, she's taken the vow of, well, never mind. I'm not going.
My thing is, if you're a freshman, in the old days, if you're a freshman football player, and you're going to play as a true freshman, you're going to play all 4 years, how many spring footballs do you get if you enroll in the fall? You get three.
Yep.
You don't get to go do spring football after your senior year. It's pointless. So essentially the calendar has shifted, at least in the favor of developing you as a football player. You graduate high school early, you enroll in January, you get the full calendar year of football. And, you know, it makes sense that way.
You get 5 years of eligibility. Look, folks, I know it's a total mess right now, but when they get back to it, which they are, you get 5 years of eligibility to play four seasons. And if you're there 5 years, the last semester of that 5 year eligibility, there's no football other than more practice, which you're not going to do. So this front loads that final spring practice into the front end, and you get the extra spring practice, like Zach just said.
Yeah. Cool. This probably does fuel the transfer portal a little bit. I think there's probably quite a few guys in the transfer portal. You know, they go their, you know, that last semester of high school is their first year of, or their first semester of college. They're on campus in the summer. By the time they start what would have been, you know, all of their high school classmates' first day of college, they probably have 30 credits. They're probably academically sophomores. And, you know, if you continue doing that throughout your career, it's easy to get a degree in 2.5-3 years if you work at it. So
took me 4.5.
A lot of these 3 year transfers with 2 or 3 years of eligibility remaining, they're probably technically grad transfers and could have gone anyway. And, you know, under the previous rules of just dipping out and transferring and playing immediately. So,
you look at it the other way. You see kids show up on campus for spring practices, and then they realize I'm in the wrong place.
Yeah.
So then they portal before they ever play their first season. They portal out. They got all the lifting in. They got the physical, you know, kind of building up, but they just switch schools. And we've seen that happen at places. Yeah.
Next question is from Get Off the Schneid.
Schneid.
How do you currently feel about K-State football's recruitment in the class of 2025?
Well, first, I'm going to hype the VIP podcast that'll be coming up later today on the website, and it is for our subscribers only. Cole Carmody and Ryan Wallace will dig deep into football recruiting. And so if you're a subscriber, I encourage you to go get ready for that. I think it's going to probably go up at 11 o'clock on Thursday. And it has not gone spectacularly well in terms of in-state. But I think the state of Kansas, word's out, there are players here. And I think more people are coming in. And honestly, we'll just see how it shakes out. It's not done till it's done. But I know K-State wants as many as in-state players as they want, as they can get. But if you find someone better at the position and they're in Iowa or Oklahoma, you're going to probably take them. It's all about talent. And they do take a lot of Kansas kids because there is talent here. People are figuring it out. K-State keeps winning. Why is that? Oh, they're recruiting a lot of Kansas kids.
Yeah. Probably a little frustrating, as always, having one commit at this point in the cycle.
Yeah.
But it hasn't really meant much, you know, in my opinion, over the last few years. So, you know, it's kind of business as usual. You'd like a kid to, you know, commit early before the summer, but you know, it is what it is. If you can get Lincoln Cure as the next one, or yep, you know, the next three or four, you know, you probably feel really good about the class. So if you can get those types of guys, your four star, your top 24/7, you know, he's number 27 in the country right now, according to 24/7 Sports. So if you can get those types of prospects, especially the ones that are in your state, I think that it can calm some nerves a little bit.
Yeah.
Kind of like Avery. Not that that class was bad by any means. It was a great class, but Avery kind of being the centerpiece of it just made it that much better.
And if we stop and, you know, look at the Dylan Edwards situation, just because they didn't come here doesn't mean they don't end up here. And I don't know if we got questions on
that. Is the last question of the,
let's go ahead and get that.
Okay. From Infected Testicle, would Dylan Edwards be a good addition?
Yeah, absolutely. And I know fans were, you know, butthurt, and it wasn't handled particularly gracefully by the Edwards family. But one group of people that never closed the door on the Edwards and Dylan in particular was the K-State football staff. They always told him, okay, we're here if you need us. We're here if you decide to change. And now they're the front runners because of that. If they had slammed that door shut like Notre Dame did, and he's not considering them, then that would be the plight. But I feel good about this because Avery and Dylan are basically best friends. They're tight, like brothers. The families are tight. And that was a factor before. And now I think it's a factor that why he'll end up back here. So, it you know, even if you lose him at the start, if you get him, you know, early enough and later on down the road, you're good. It's going to be good. Now, from playing standpoint, hell yes. K-State was looking for a backup running back in the portal. They didn't like the depth and lack of experience. They have the same feelings about quarterback, to be honest. They're good players, but they just, what if they get the yips in a game? You don't know. Thank you, Daphne. So they were looking for this. So they need someone to take some carries away from DJ Giddens. But Dylan can also go to the slot. He can also maybe change how you're calling plays and getting him on the field more often with DJ than just a typical backup running back. And he's also just built to be a kick and punt returner. So, yeah, they will find plenty of playing time for Dylan Edwards.
Yeah, I think he's an excellent addition to the offensive side of the football. I think it, I don't want to say it completes the offensive side of the football, but if they're able to get him, it makes you more comfortable.
Yeah.
Especially if DJ Giddens gets banged up at all and Dylan Edwards becomes the RB1, you know, I don't think that anybody's upset at that. Yeah, I get that, you know, he commit, you know, goes to Notre Dame, goes to Colorado, you know, likes transferring a bunch, but or not, I guess this is his only transfer, but, you know, changing his mind a lot. I think if he changes his mind this time to K-State, I think that it becomes final. I think he ends his career here. This is where he'll shine, have success. I don't think he goes anywhere else. It's close to home. You know, his family can come to every game. I think it's an easy decision, at least from that standpoint, I think. But like you said, the K-State coaching staff left the door open for him to come back because the K-State coaching staff knows kids change their mind. They could see it coming a mile away. He's flip-flopped this much. You know, eventually he might come back.
The question that I'd maybe present is what can Kansas State promise Dylan Edwards, right? Like DJ Giddens is there. There are some wideouts that are there. Who knows who's going to be returning kicks or punts? What can you promise Dylan Edwards? Because he seems to me, and I'm sure you guys would probably agree, that he's the type of guy that wants to be promised that he's going to play. And he doesn't necessarily, I don't want to say he runs away from competition, but he wants to know that he's going to be able to play. So that might be the biggest challenge for K-State and that staff is the pitch to where he fits in on the roster. He's obviously very, very familiar with Manhattan, Kansas State University. Avery Johnson's been outspoken about trying to get Dylan Edwards to come back. And so credit to K-State, though, for keeping that door open. You never want to shut it. You know, guys, I don't think I've told you guys, I'm finally getting a new car. And so I've been talking to some dealers. I know, crazy, right? But you tell them, I told a few that, hey, I'm not going to go with you guys, but I appreciate your time. And there's some that don't even respond to that. And then there's some that are saying, okay, we appreciate your time. If there's anything that they can do to help me out, you know, by all means, reach out. And so that's what Kansas State did, right? You know, just because it didn't work out that one time doesn't mean it can't work out in the future. So I think the biggest thing is just what can Kansas State staff sort of pitch to Dylan Edwards as to how he'll fit into that system. I think that maybe the locker room, right, you might be, I don't want to say you've got to keep a sharp eye on Dylan Edwards, but keep him in check, right? You want to keep him happy. If he's not happy, he, bluntly put, has shown that he'll get up and leave. And so you've got to promise him something and you got to keep that promise. And so maybe the challenging part here is the fact that DJ Giddens is there, and I don't want to have it be, if you're K-State, you don't want to tell him, hey, when DJ Giddens gets hurt, you'll be number one running back, right? I think you, but does Dylan Edwards want to be sort of a gadget guy in the offense? These are all questions that I don't know the answer to. Maybe Wally or Cole or Dylan Edwards himself could be able to answer better, but those are all some thoughts to keep in mind.
To your point, Gills, I think that if he does return to K-State, I think that's a sign of being humbled a little bit and accepting your role. And you might have gotten in over your head trying to go to Colorado, and it just didn't work out. I think that if he does come to K-State, I think that's at least, a recognition that, hey, one, I should have been here all along. Two, I should probably accept the role that's given to me, and it's all going to work out in the end.
I agree. I saw a Colorado video, and overall it was a good video. It's, very homerism, but that's okay. And the guy tried to say, Dylan's just running from competition. He wants to go someplace he's guaranteed to start. Dude, that's not at all what he's doing. I mean, if your coach through spring ball said, you're our number one guy, you're our guy for 2024, and never mentioned that he's going to take two veteran portal running backs from prominent schools, never brought that up once, you might feel a little betrayed and lied to. And sure, that's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
If you're not up front with your players, they're going to go into the portal. And he knows damn well coming to K-State, I can guarantee you he's been told, well, DJ Giddens is the guy. You're not displacing him. You might reduce his carries a little bit more than they thought they'd have to, but I think the actual result will be finding ways to get them on the field together, to get these weapons out there together. I mean, you've got so much more speed at receiver now. Keegan Johnson's healthy. Jace Brown, Dante Cephas can run. And of course, Oakley at tight end is a great target. You begin to amass this number of weapons on your offense that becomes hard, very difficult for opposing defenses to handle all that. And I got to be honest, it's hard to sleep if I lay in bed and think about Dylan Edwards and Avery Johnson running the zone read. What do you take away? How do you handle that? Particularly if throwing is an option also. I'm excited to see. I'm sure if he comes to K-State, and as I said, as I sit here right now at 6-something on Wednesday evening, I would think he's coming. But A&M hopped in. They're going to throw a bag of money at him, I'm sure. But at this point, I'm not sure Dylan is motivated by getting the bag. I think he's motivated for liking where his feet are. And he's felt out of place in Colorado. He's felt like he doesn't have a lot of, kind of a social, construct. He kind of has been a loner out there. They do things very strangely at Colorado. They have a lot of video meetings. And I keep hearing from recruits saying, transfer portal guys that leave Colorado, I want to go to a real program. Let's run like a college football program. Deion's trying to do NFL stuff at the college level, and I don't think it works. And the kids aren't old enough to understand its business. To them, there's still an element, I'm going to college and playing football. Deion is like, it's all business. You're all getting paid. There's some truth to that, but also you have to understand they don't have the maturity you need to handle some of this.
I do wonder how many of these Colorado transfers out kind of realize that Deion's probably going to take his ball and go home if things don't work out through six games this year.
I think he's done after this year. I think once his son's done playing quarterback, he's done.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe he'll wait around for his other son. I think he's a year behind, but I don't think so.
They probably both go to the draft.
Yeah.
Or try. I don't think this is a long-term thing for Colorado, unfortunately.
One of my favorite things I've heard about Deion's program is his sons don't do media. Literally, if you want them to do anything, including a simple interview, they will ask you, how much you're going to pay me? And I understand if you're going to do a podcast on the regular, you should get paid for that. But if you're just, they don't show up for media days to talk about the next opponent. Your starting quarterback requires to be paid to do what is a team function. Now, man, that's not sustainable. That's not the way you can't get away. You can't just do that over the long term. Everyone else in that locker room sees that nonsense. So, well, that's it for the first half of this Power Cat podcast. Hope you enjoyed that. I'm sorry that Ryan Gilbert was on it. We tried to silence his mic, and he found a workaround, and he got on the show. It's my fault. And we're going to come back in the second half, and we're going to talk to about stuff that hopefully Ryan Gilbert will be part of. Because I missed the tenor of his voice throughout that.
There will be some
soothing whatever. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back after these messages from our sponsors.
Please visit The Fridge Wholesale Liquor, located at the corner of Claflin and Westport Road in Manhattan, Kansas.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Welcome back to the show. Let's return to the Cats and Dogs studio.
Welcome back to the Power Cat podcast, Fitz and Gills and Zach. And I've had the camera on, the studio cam on, so you can see the Cats and Dogs studio. Dude's laying way back there. He kind of shows up. He kind of also blends into the floor. And Daphne, throughout that first half, was begging for attention. So you got to see my elite skill level of talking and petting a dog at the same time. It's kind of like walking and chewing gum. Which Ryan Gilbert can't do. I've never seen him do it.
Remember what your mom told you, Fitz?
Be nice to
Gilbert. Be nice to Gilbert. Always listen to your mother, Fitz. Come on.
Okay. More of your questions from Wabash Station in a second. Remember, we're sponsored by The Fridge Wholesale Liquor. When you're in town, make sure you check them out. If you're a bourbon connoisseur, they have the best stuff there. They really don't mess around. If your liquor store has a cabinet with that, and you're in Kansas, not in a big metro area, has a cabinet that has a key lock on it, you know it's the good stuff. It's valuable. It's behind the glass. I've never once asked them to open that up. I can't afford it. But if you can, The Fridge is your place. On with your questions from Wabash Station. Take it away, Zach.
First question is from DonnieCat97. I don't think I said that last week. Welcome. I think he only has like 11 posts or something. But welcome, DonnieCat. Why is recruiting a high-caliber big man so difficult? I thought K-State's NIL budget would help them compete at the highest level this offseason.
It is. I mean, they're in on some really good players. You know, Bob Miller's really good. This kid that's in here from Rutgers. You want to say his name, Ryan Gilbert?
No, Clifford. Yeah. And then no.
Yeah.
His first name's Clifford.
It's really competitive for these big men. So they are less likely to be, you know, I'm going to take a visit and be done unless they've already arranged something. You know, clearly the one guy from Arizona had it all wrapped up with Indiana for $1 million+. I mean, I don't think it has to be a really special player if you're K-State to spend that kind of money, and that most don't need that kind of money, but they are competitive. It's not, if they don't get players, folks, it's not because of NIL necessarily. It just didn't work for them, and maybe they didn't feel like they'd fit in.
Yeah. One thing to keep in mind, we watched the Final Four. I know we talked about this, how there's maybe a perception out there that all these elite teams are operating through their post player, but those guys are elite players, right? Yeah. There's only, I don't want to put a number on it, 10, 15, 5, I don't know. Yeah. There's only X number of those type of players out there, right? Like, look at the Big 12. I'm sure there's some good dominant bigs, but not every team has one. It's okay if, Naquan Tomlin is your five, or a smaller, David Gasson, or, play smaller. That's how you can win games, by doing that too. So that's probably maybe the root cause here, is you see those elite teams with those players. Well, that's because those players are elite. It is unreasonable to expect K-State to get a guy like that, where the entire team just works around a player like that. If you can get a guy like Michael Beasley, I know he wasn't a five, like a center, but where he's that special. Guys, if Michael Beasley was playing right now, any team would revolve around him. If any point guard, any center, wing, forward, doesn't matter. Those special players, right, that we saw in the Final Four, that's where this is coming from. But, so that kind of leads me into the point here, is that there's just not that many special centers out there, right? Like, even Baba Miller is probably, you're getting him for his longer, what his potential, what he can maybe do moving forward. Clifford from Rutgers, again, he is a big-time guy. And if K-State can get him, then absolutely, that's huge. But there's only a finite number of players out there that are like that. And so I'm happy that they are going after some bigs, but they're still going after those guards, which is just crazy. But we saw RJ Jones depart Wednesday morning. And so I think I know RJ Jones was still 100% bought in with Kansas State after Doug McDaniel was committed. But then you see CJ Jones, another guy, come in, and you're looking at the visits and everyone that's kind of getting interest from Kansas State. It's guard after guard after guard. And so, I don't blame Jones one bit. There's nothing promised on that roster. Obviously, you've got to work and compete in the locker room, and iron sharpens iron, all that stuff. But I think he was smart, and he realized, this is – you look at kind of those – there's potentially five, right? You got CJ Jones, Doug McDaniel, Day-Day Ames, and –
David Castillo?
Castillo coming in, right? Yeah. So that's if it's Glover, it's five. So, Jones is competing as the roster stands right now for basically one of those two spots. I think the staff has shown that they probably wouldn't have him playing the point guard. So basically that number two spot. And they're going to be bringing in more guys from the portal at the guard spot. The Nova guy is a sharpshooter. So I think, there's just a lot of moving parts here still going on. But back to the point, getting a big man I think is great, because that's where this team – has its glaring need right now. You're losing a guy like RJ Jones, and Arthur Kaluma has gone from the portal as well, but you got to go out and get those bigs. So if you can get Clifford, anybody you can get's going to be great. But back to the main overall point here that I'll make, and I'll stand firm on this, is it's unreasonable to expect K-State to have a difference maker at that post position. Not many teams have the luxury of having that, right? And if you can get it, that's great, that's awesome. But I'm not going to say K-State needs a difference maker. If you can get somebody that's, I don't want to say Will McNair, but maybe a tad bit better than Will McNair, because McNair had his strengths and weaknesses, right? If you can get somebody that's an improvement from Will McNair, you get somebody with the rim-protecting capabilities that Jarrell Colbert had, somebody as strong as Thomas Gibson or DJ Johnson, somebody with the fundamentals of Curtis Kelly, just a little bit of a step up, and I think K-State's going to be just fine. You don't necessarily have to get a superstar at that position. Right. When you play five on offense, your wings and players like that, when guys are moving around, okay, that's why maybe K-State isn't getting or going after so many of those guys, right? That's not the type of player that's going to play in a five on offense. Zach Edey would not play well in that system at Kansas State.
Well, let's back up and talk about a couple of things here. First, Zach Edey was the greatest big man in college basketball since, Bill Russell, Lou Alcindor. You can go through the list. He was absolutely dominant, but he was also a project. So kudos to Purdue to develop him, because he wasn't very good when he got there. So that's what you do every time you bring in a big man that isn't quite ready. He didn't go the course of Jason Bennett. He got better. And the other thing, and I just did a daily delivery on this, is if you recall those earlier Baylor teams, I think he, as Jerome Tang, is literally trying to replicate the formula they had that was so effective and made Baylor not only winning a lot of games, but they were fun to watch. And it involves having two post players. Both of them can run the court, but one's the main guy, and then another, maybe the younger guy, comes in and gives minutes. They rotate those two big guys, and they got four dudes on the court around them. Four guys. There's no real position. Someone's a point guard, but there's no real positions. There's playing. And every time now they're getting a 6'5 guy, and they've got one on campus right now, I recognize that this is what they're doing. I mean, that guy's probably Kaluma's replacement, and they're just trying to build a team filled with athletes. Think about how fast they went in year one compared to year two. And the two key ingredients to that were, one, Marquise Noel, because he could handle that. He could push the ball. He could go really fast. But year five was David Gasan, who proved to be not able to hold up defensively as the five, but offensively, their fives couldn't keep up with him, and he was rim running and getting a lot more dunks. They need to get back to that, and you need to have the horses if you want to run, and they're getting them.
Next question is from Kevin316. The deadline to declare for the NBA draft is this Saturday. The deadline to enter the portal is next Wednesday. What are the chances any more K-State players entering the portal? And what are the chances of Jerome Tang completing his roster by June 1st, like he has said he wants to do?
I don't think they should, personally.
No. I think it's like a 0% chance to finish rate.
What he's saying is, we're going to have a team. We'll be able to take the court with what we have in June 1st.
More than the 1, 2, and 13 blanks on the T-shirt.
Right. What they're going to end up with, I would hope, is at least one open scholarship for that kid who pops up in August.
Yep.
I mean, can you imagine the frustration if they had filled up before Keontae Johnson even came available and then they didn't have room for him? They would have lost their minds. So I don't want them to be done by June 1. I'm fine if they're at 11 or 12. I hope they are. I hope they're at least at 11. But I wouldn't mind if they keep some in their back pocket. You just never know what's going to happen.
Yeah. The only one that you could maybe, in a vacuum, would maybe make sense would be Buddy Rich. However, that position that he's going to play, right, he's not necessarily in danger, right, with the guards. But also, Buddy Rich is locked in and ready to go, man. C.J. Jones is high school buddy, St. Louis kid, right? Like, everything. He welcomed him into Manhattan on his campus. And so, by all means, I think Buddy Rich was maybe not overly pleased with his minutes last season, but I think he's took some time to mature a little bit, and he's going to be better next season, and he's locked in on K-State. So in a vacuum, yeah, Buddy Rich would maybe be the only guy to answer that, but he's not. I don't see him going anywhere, especially with C.J. Jones in town now. So I think that R.J. Jones is likely the last departure. Everybody else, it just doesn't make sense for anybody else to leave. I mean, Day-Day, I don't have any reason to believe he would go, but, you know, he played a prominent role in last year's team, especially towards the end. So I think that was it. I think that, so now it's five, right? And that's without words from Glover and Gasan. So that could grow, but five right now, five open spots is what K-State has. Wow. And so, yeah, I certainly didn't see Jones coming, especially once the season ended and there was that first initial sort of wave. Like, Dorian Finister was on his way out, I think, what's the final buzzer sounded of that game, right? I think he had made up his mind. The minutes dwindled throughout the year. And so, but Jones, right? And Kaluma, I know, was 50-50 on the draft. And so things happen, things change. When you see guys going out, you see the staff going out and getting guys in the portal, that can change things. But right now, no, I think that this is it. I think with the departures, it'll just be, should be just additions moving forward for K-State.
I know, and RJ was happy here, but that's a little bit like Dylan Edwards.
When you get recruited over,
yeah.
I mean, it's pretty clear messaging there, if, whether you're saying it out loud or not.
You know, and there is some truth in, do you want to stay to compete? But also, if you feel like, well, I put in my time and now not being rewarded for it, I get it.
Yep.
And particularly in basketball, he's gonna land somewhere good. I mean, I don't know. It always fascinates me where kids end up. You know, quite often what we think are a good player end up at, you know, UTSA or not. And there's nothing wrong with that, but they're not going to another Power Five. And maybe that will be his plight. But I don't know. I can almost see him going to like St. Louis or something. Not sure. What's his hometown? Why am I spacing that off? Where's he from?
Dallas area.
Yeah. So maybe SMU play ACC, you know, something like that. I could see that. And I'm happy for the kid because he's going to find his happy. And as fans, we don't appreciate that enough. If you're in a situation where you're not 100% in, you're not 100% happy, you probably should go somewhere to find that, but be very calculated in how you do that. Just don't say, okay, I'm going to go over here and roll the dice. No, make sure you do your research.
We don't know what the messages are right now and also in the recruiting trail, but I would have to believe that maybe the staff's message to some of these guys, the high school recruits, may have changed a little bit from the time RJ Jones had committed, right? I think it was, especially after this past season, you look at Kansas State missing the NCAA tournament. Jerome Tang, he knew something that, I'm not saying something had to change drastically, but he knew that he had to get back to the NCAA tournament, especially after getting that raise and the Arkansas scare and all that stuff. And so the philosophy a little bit has changed. They're going out in the portal and they're getting dudes, right? Early on, you know, you go back to last season, absolutely. They went and gotten Tyler Perry, Arthur Kaluma. They got dudes, right? But those guys in the high school ranks, I think, were still maybe – had a fair shot to be part of that plan for the next season. But now, you know, the writing's on the wall, actions speak louder than words when they're going out and recruiting those guys in the portal. I mean, by all means, we don't know what the message was now. It could have been, hey, RJ, you've got to go out and show us in practice. And if you're good enough, whatever, you're going to start. Or we don't know. It could have been the opposite and said, I mean, you're just going to be, because like you look at last season and RJ was, by and large, a three-point specialist. I don't think they gave him the keys that like they gave Marquise Noel or a play like that. Okay. And so who knows what the conversations were like, but I forget what the question even the point even was here. But a lot of things happen between, you know, behind closed doors and stuff that we may not know about. And so yeah, I forget what the question even was.
But you've learned a lot from me.
It's also in front of you, is it? You have it open.
I have it on my phone, but I don't have my phone like open the whole time.
You're slowly so, moving off screen too.
Is black right now. Oh, my home screen. There it is.
Yeah.
Now that's what I'm looking at.
Okay. You're slowly moving off screen too. There.
There.
I'm drifting.
Yeah. I don't know.
See, I would be surprised if something happened that forced RJ Jones in the portal other than seeing the staff recruiting over him. Because if he knew this was what was going to happen, he would have left in the initial wave back in March.
And something folks, changed, I mean, in the last month or a couple
could,
weeks.
It probably. Could be. We don't know what his NIL is. And maybe the level of NIL they're offering some of these players exceeded that. There's a whole other level here that we don't see anymore. We don't understand. Kids talk about what other kids are getting paid. And if you get your NIL wrong in terms of the locker room, it really screw you up. So, yeah, maybe that's it. I don't know, but I wish him luck. He's a good kid.
Absolutely.
Next question is from Jay Boland, PSU. With Gene Taylor celebrating his 7th year anniversary of his very successful hiring last week, how much longer do you think he remains at K-State before he retires or leaves? Do you have a list of who you'd like to see take his place after?
Well, my list just went to Missouri. My entire list was.
Yeah, the list starts and begins with Laird Veach.
You know, I'm not going to worry about the next AD. I mean, I don't know. Maybe by the time Gene retires, Kenny Lanou will be in line. He's basically understudying. Joel Shields is the number two. Maybe. I don't know. I don't know where they're headed with this. But I don't think he's going to retire anytime soon. I think he and Chris Kleiman are attached. I don't think Chris is going to go into his 60s as a coach. I just don't. Everything going on, unless college football gets this NIL thing straightened out and how this is going to work, a lot of coaches aren't going to make it. If they get a good contract, they'll call it good. And that's just the reality. They are now NFL coaches, not paid like NFL head coaches. And so I don't know. I don't know how long Gene sticks around. I hope it's for a very long time, honestly, because he's 66. He's got, you know, I think it's another, I don't know, 7 years on his contract. I don't see him going to the end of that, but if he did, it'd be really good for the school, unless he kept losing his dentures. And then that'd be embarrassing. I mean, you know, if he's up there and he's trying to talk and he's gumming.
He has dentures.
Well, he might by then. That's what I'm saying.
Do you have dentures?
No.
You sure about that?
My teeth work, unlike other things. But yeah, my teeth are functioning. Although my front two teeth are fake. Yeah, that's a whole different.
You know, give credit to Gene Taylor, give credit to John Curry for the financial outlook of the department, the financial health, you know, running at a surplus, getting rid of university funding. I mean, from a business standpoint, they did a good job. I'm a little worried at who the next guy is going to be,
right,
just because of how good K-State has been. Gene Taylor has hit it out of the park with head coach hires, and it's not just football and basketball. He's done a lot of good things in the hiring realm. At some point, somebody is going to make a mistake, whether it's Gene, there's going to be a bad hire one day. And I hopefully it's not the next AD is the point I'm making. Hopefully they can find whoever it is. They have some sort of experience. I think Laird Veach would be great. There's probably a dozen other guys that would do a great job at K-State. You know, I mean, that's how they found Gene at Iowa. You know, that was, you know, what, 2017, when his name popped up, nobody really knew who he was. Nobody knew who he was. So there's tons of individuals across the country that are number twos or number threes that are probably ready to be a Power Five or Power Four athletic director. So I'm not terribly worried, but when you look at how much success, when will it run out from a financial aspect, a budget aspect, and, you know, getting very fortunate with your head coach hires.
Agree.
I don't know, Jay Boland, if the question just says, how long is Gene Taylor asking? I'm not sure if there's any concern about him in his future, but you look at what's going on right now, you know, things are going well. You look at what just happened with Jerome Tang, getting him to stay in Ireland, the pros and the money being brought in, like, he's cooking, right? And so until he starts to slow down or show fatigue or, you know, whatever, like, I'm not concerned. I mean, obviously there's going to come a time where Gene may think it's best to just be done, but he's killing it right now. And so I don't know if there's – I don't know what the underlying question is, reading between the lines of the question, but like right now – Gene's doing a phenomenal job, and so I don't think there's any concern with him stepping away because he's just getting old, so to speak. He's obviously, his age is his age, but he's making some big time moves that boomers maybe don't make, like Fitz. That's it.
I think you're right, Fitz, about him and Chris Kleiman being attached to the hip a little bit. And I think it'll be interesting to see now in the new era of the college football playoff, if K-State can make it and if they can make deep runs. I mean, if Chris Kleiman wins a national championship, does he go out on top? I think he might go out on top. I mean, that's the only thing he hasn't done in college football. He's won 4 national titles at the FCS level. And then if he goes and does it at the FBS level, what more is there to prove?
I'm going to look right at the camera and say this. If Chris Kleiman wins a national title and announces on the stage, that's it for me, I've done it, I'm out. Gene Taylor, you do not retire until you hire the next guy. Nope. I know you want to go out with your buddy, but you got to hire the next guy. I only trust you with that task. We always said it's going to be impossible to follow Bill Snyder. Ron Prince proved that right. Chris Kleiman has proved it wrong. It's been miraculous. So, yeah, I'd like you to do the next coach.
Counterpoint, Gene Taylor does go out with Chris Kleiman to give a softball to the next AD to hire Colin Klein.
Yeah, I see where you're going.
I don't know.
Connor Riley and Joe Klanderman and Matt Wells might inch ahead of that pack. Who knows where Colin Klein could be a head coach in the SEC in 2 years? He could,
and he could be out in four.
He'd be out in one.
That's true. Yeah.
I mean, it's just brutal.
Yeah, it is that bad. Last question of the podcast. This is a marathon. From KSU Todd. How does the new Big 12 football schedule affect the top dogs coming in? And he lists Utah and Arizona as the top dogs. Will they struggle with so many new teams on their schedule? And if so, does this help K-State? Or does every team in the conference have enough new faces to play that this is a wash?
Yeah, there's going to be a feeling out period here. I know Utah feels like they're going to walk in and run the conference. Deion said, Big 12 sucks and Colorado is going to run the conference. I appreciate the confidence, but maybe play a damn game and find out what the conference is like. What they're going to struggle with is the relentless nature of the schedule. Now that Kansas is really good, there will always be someone at the bottom, but they were the bottom and they were almost assuredly, unless you were Texas, a victory. And that's just the way it was. There are no off weeks in this conference. Week after week after week, it's just a grind. And maybe you are the best team, but you also got to survive the gauntlet. And it's not easy to do. K-State showed it last season. So I appreciate it. I you're right. There's going to be a situation here where you do build up familiarity with programs and, you know, head coaches and their tendencies, and you wipe that slate clean by moving, although you retain Arizona, Arizona State, and Colorado. So you've got three schools you're familiar with. And, you know, if you stop and look at it, maybe that's about all everyone has. If you know, half the conference is new in over a one-year period, you know, let alone, you know, the second football season coming in, there'll be teams, half the teams, new teams will be their first year and half, four of them will be their second year. That's still a learning curve. So I think there'll be a lot of things thrown out the window with the new members.
I think it helps K-State a little bit. Just, you know, I think a lot of the travel will get to a lot of teams out on the coasts more so than it will K-State. I think K-State is traveling quite a bit this year, but they go to a lot of places that they've been before, I think, off the top of my head. And I just saw Colorado and BYU in my head. They have not been there for a while. But I think it helps K-State a little bit with all these new teams having to kind of figure out how to play each other. I think K-State will be fine. I think on the other hand, it does hurt a little bit just because, yeah, you have a lot of unfamiliar games. But I feel like between the rest of the new programs, I think that they will struggle a little bit more than K-State might.
You know, you look at this, here's where they're going. They play at BYU, new experience. They go to Colorado, new experience for this group. They go to West Virginia, so that's familiar. They also go to Houston, new experience. And then they close at Iowa State in a snowstorm. So the two out of their five road games are unfamiliar, or three are unfamiliar. So it's amazing. They also have Oklahoma State and Kansas coming in, but you got Arizona State and Cincinnati coming in, and they're new. That's a lot of new teams on your schedule. It just is. And that's going to be that way for a lot of teams. That it? We were really long. I didn't even get to bust on Gilbert in the second half. I wanted to say, he kept bringing up vacuums, and I thought, yeah, Gilbert, you'd familiar with the vacuums, they suck too.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Anyhow, that's it for the Power Cat podcast. I love Ryan Gilbert. I do. Yeah. He's got dreamy eyes. Hey, when you get that new car, are you looking at Subaru Outbacks?
No, I don't know what that is.
Oh, I just thought by your haircut, you might be looking at that. That's it for the podcast.
Is that a compliment or a diss?
We'll tell you off the air.
Love you, Gills. That's it for the podcast. Well, look out for the VIP podcast. If you're a member of Go PowerCat, if you're not, you might want to solve that as Wally and Cole get together and go on another deep dive into football recruiting. That'll be available at Go PowerCat later this day, unless something went wrong with production tonight. You always got to put that asterisk in there. Bye.
This has been a GoPowerCat.com and Spirit Street production. Please support this show by subscribing to this YouTube channel or follow us on your favorite podcast platform.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
You're ready, Bob.
Well, all right.
Audiences are raving. Bob Marley is electrifying. It's the feel-good movie of the year.
You dig?
Bob Marley, One Love. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
The wait is over. The Chi returns with new episodes on Paramount Plus.
What brings you to the show?
Opportunity.
Everybody get down!
Walk right up to the side.
A new rain is coming to the South Side.
Never should have sent a boy to do a woman's job.
The Chi. New episodes May 10th. Visit ParamountPlus.com/The Chi to get a 50% discount off the Paramount Plus with Showtime annual plan. Offer ends July 14th. Subscription auto renews. Restrictions apply.